Well, safe to say our attention here on Flames at 5 is going to be on the big NHL story today, and that has to do with the Montreal Canadiens firing Michel Therrien and bringing back Claude Julien. We are joined down the South Street Burger guest hotline by our NHL insider, Chris Johnston, also a senior hockey writer. What do you make of this decision, Chris? I mean, there's a lot of questions I can ask you about it, but this is crazy.
Well, it was certainly a bit of a shock. I mean, people had linked Claude Julien to the Montreal Canadiens, but, you know, I didn't see too many who felt it would come this soon. And, you know, ultimately, I believe that this is directly related to other teams having interest in Claude Julien and him being such a hot commodity on the market, and that if the Montreal Canadiens were ever going to want to bring him back and give him a second shot behind their bench, that the time had to be now. And, you know, I guess in some ways, it fell right for Marc Bergevin to make that sort of decision. The team has been struggling, and they are on their bye week. And then, you know, I think it was a moment where they could step back and look at things. But, you know, this happened very quickly here in the last couple of days, getting him signed to a contract. I believe he got an extension beyond next year, which is what he originally had on a deal with Boston. And, you know, kind of a shakeup in the Atlantic Division.
And I think it's crazy for a lot of reasons. One, that these two were involved 14 years ago or whatever it was, you know, as Julien's first job was replacing Terry. And I think it's kind of crazy that it's another coaching change, you know, in the same division during a five-day break. It's crazy because of who the teams are that are involved. Would there ever have been a scenario in which the Bruins wouldn't have given permission for the Montreal Canadiens to talk to Julien?
Well, you know, there is a formal permission that has to be given, but, you know, it's generally accepted that you don't stand in the way of someone's ability to work. And, I mean, that was clearly put to the test here. I mean, Boston, I guess, has incentive because they did owe him for the rest of the season and all of next his salary. So they do save that money by allowing him to talk to the Canadiens and ultimately sign with them. But, you know, also, I think it's just the right thing to do. He's chosen to fire a guy, you know, to give him a chance to go, you know, seek employment elsewhere. And then, you know, I'm not aware of any specific circumstances where that hasn't been the case. But, you know, it is kind of, I think, just the way the business is done generally, that you give him that chance. And, I mean, it's such a strange, crazy parallel here because, let's face it, in 2 months or so, give or take, these teams could be playing each other in a playoff series. And then, you know, that sort of thing you really don't see too often. And, you know, I don't know that it's a matter even of Claude Julien having secrets or knowing, you know, things from behind closed doors in Boston. But, you know, just to see a coach that good go to a division rival, one that the Bruins are trying to catch here and as they, you know, pursue a playoff spot, is makes it especially, you know, kind of a unique scenario.
From your point of view, Chris, what wasn't working? What wasn't in, you know, working between the coach and the team? I mean, we know about the struggles of the goalie. We know that they've been injured, yet they're still leading the Atlantic Division. What was the problem?
Well, there were many. I mean, beyond Max Pacioretty, who's had a great season and has been, you know, very productive for them, I mean, there's a lot of underachievers there. And you know, unfortunately, some of that gets placed on the coach, you know, whether it's fair or not. And you know, I think Alex Galchenyuk lately has been a bit of a touch point. We've seen that in the past as well, but since he's returned from an injury, he played one game on the wing, you know, after kind of being the number one center and you know, just didn't look to be himself. I mean, the mere idea of Carey Price struggling is something that, you know, you just don't expect to see. I mean, obviously he's human and he's been through it in the past, but, you know, he's had a degree of struggles that, you know, unfortunately, I don't think you can really associate with Michel Therrien, but the results weren't there. You know, we have discussed how important this season is for Montreal. That they really do believe they're in the window of trying to maximize whatever this team can be right now. And when the best French-speaking coach in the league, you know, all of a sudden becomes available, like, you can understand, you know, just given sort of the atmosphere in the city and around the team and that playing out, that why this happened. I'm not sure it's much more other than wanting to get a new voice in there. You know, I will say, quote, Julien has had very strong results. Even in Boston, the underlying numbers for that team were good when he was fired and has, you know, shown himself to be someone who can devise a system and that you know, produces, you know, good shot metrics. And, you know, that's something that Montreal has struggled with at times under Michelle Therrien's reign, and, you know, so maybe there'll be some changes that way. But, you know, I really do feel it's more about getting a new voice in and doing whatever Marc Bergevin can at this point to try to squeeze more out of his team.
Chris, two more on this topic. One's probably a sensible question. The other one's probably a little insane. So I'll give you the sensible question first. And that is, you mentioned before that Montreal felt the need to act, that other teams could be interested. Is it your feeling that that goes beyond teams that are with interim coaches, or in the case of Las Vegas, without a coach? Or could there be other teams that are currently employing a coach that might have been looking to make a move?
Well, I do believe Vegas was one that had requested permission to speak with them. And, you know, in that case, we know they're doing that with a lot of candidates. It doesn't mean that they were, you know, going to right. immediately try to hire them by any stretch. But, you know, I do think as well that Florida had interest. It did seem that they were more inclined to wait out the year before having that kind of talk. But, you know, I do have reason to believe it goes even deeper than that. I just don't know the team in a strong enough way that I'm willing to even speculate about it. But you know, this sort of coach doesn't come around too often. And I think, you know, we discussed that after he was let go last week in Boston, that essentially he was going to be as unemployed as long as he wanted to be. He had the ability to collect a paycheck and wait out his options. And in this case, obviously, this is a unique opportunity, first of all, to go back to a team he's already coached before. You don't see that too often in general. But also, you know, for someone to grow up near Montreal, it's a pretty special opportunity anytime you can coach another Original Six team and be behind the bench of the Canadians. And, you know, that was clearly too good of an opportunity to pass up. So, you know, I don't know that Claude, I don't know what he was thinking specifically, whether he was anxious to just sort of take any job that came his way. But, you know, I can totally understand why he's only going to end up with, you know, a week and a half off between coaching games, give or take, now that Montreal's come calling for him.
And here's the little bit of an insane question, but bear with me, and hopefully you'll see where I'm coming from. We just spent, you know, a week or so here in Calgary talking about the merits of the CBA-mandated five-day break, and I think most of us don't like it now because the team took a whooping yesterday. But I'm just wondering if the general managers might not look at, I mean, this is now 2 weeks in a row with teams on these breaks. This is a very good time to carry out this decision, right? You get a little bit of leeway that you wouldn't normally get. If general managers might be more apt to kind of continue this and be favor. I don't think we all want it in the same period of time, but I'm wondering if this, you know, these types of moves, if it doesn't give general managers kind of an idea that maybe they should keep this thing in.
Well, it's certainly one more reason for coaches not to like it, and we know coaches even not in danger of losing their job, haven't liked the notion of losing their players for 5 days of work and, you know, not really being able to control what they do and how they live. And obviously we've seen a lot of teams struggle coming back. It's not just the Flames in that category, you know, in this first year of it. And for teams that are struggling, I think it can be positive, though. I mean, even for Montreal, had they not made this change, the way they played in their last game at Boston on Sunday suggested that they needed some time to clear their minds. And, you know, I do think there's an element here where it's not simply just tactics or you know, the way the lines are being deployed or anything like that. I mean, there was clearly some mental fatigue, you know, building up around that group, especially with a guy like Carey Price, who struggled to a degree we're not used to seeing. So, you know, there is a benefit to that break. And, you know, I haven't had a chance to pull any GMs specifically on this, but, you know, maybe they'll come around to it. I still get the feeling that, you know, they're going to keep this, but it's going to look a little different. I think that, you know, the main issue is having them spread out, you know, across the league. I mean, there's still some teams out there, San Jose, I know, that hasn't had one yet. And, you know, then you had a team like Pittsburgh, which had it, you know, basically, I think, the first week of January. And then, you know, that's kind of created some issues that I don't think the GMs will like. But, you know, this is going to be around to stay, and maybe we'll see it becomes kind of one of those points where teams that especially are struggling take stock of things and have, you know, a few days to make a decision. Because, you know, an aspect of this is, you know, Claude Julien now can take care of the media responsibilities he has to tomorrow in Montreal. He doesn't have practice again until Friday and his first game on Saturday. I mean, that's a little bit more lead time for any coach, you know, in a midseason kind of situation than you usually see. And, you know, I can see benefit to that. I mean, look, if this is in the back of your mind, as an NHL team or general manager, it makes sense if you have one of those breaks coming to do it then, because, you know, there's a lot of sort of housekeeping, not to mention, you know, guy moving moving addresses and you know, getting used to new personnel, that you can get a couple extra days to, you know, to have yourself in a better position for success.
He's Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our NHL insider, down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Let's go back into what is becoming a very interesting trade marketplace leading up to March 1st. And by that, the two teams that are somewhat involved in today's coaching decision, Boston and Montreal, appear to be interested in Matt Duchene. I know that that there was a lot of talk here recently with general managers taking in games. What's the latest as you see it with Colorado and Duchene?
Well, and Boston, I think, is actually has its eyes on Gabriel Landeskog, you know, probably a bit more than Duchene. So, you know, when you see Joe Sakic and his assistant Chris McFarland attend that game in Boston on Sunday, obviously it created a stir on Twitter. But I think it was really an opportunity for, you know, some of the Avs decision makers to see two of the teams that they're having conversations with. But it certainly sounds at this point like there's others involved as well. I don't think, you know, we can narrow in too squarely just yet on saying that you know, Duchene will be coming to Montreal and Landeskog will be going to Boston. I mean, that remains a possibility in both cases. But, you know, there's other teams still sniffing around here. And you know, we're kind of moving into the most important week so far of Joe Sakic's life as a GM, I would argue. I mean, it does seem that one or both of those guys, I'm fairly comfortable saying at least one of them will move by March 1st, and there's a potential for both. And if you're trading away those kind of, you know, cornerstone guys, you know, players that were drafted, you know, right up at the top of the draft after, you know, previous failed seasons, you really have to maximize the return. So, you know, it seems like they're going to still wait it out a little bit, do their diligence and talk and see where the market is and make some decisions. But, you know, I do think that it goes a little deeper than just the teams that Joe Sakic had the fortune of watching on Sunday night.
I know we've talked about this on and off, but just kind of revisit how crazy, you know, everything's crazy today for me. I got to apologize, Chris. But, I mean, it's a different season. You know, with the salary cap being flat, with expansion coming up, with the draft being, you know, kind of what it is there any more value for Joe to kind of say, well, you know, this was great, but I want to see what I can get at the draft? Because most, you know, most GMs, and certainly Brian Burke here tells us all the time that, you know, GMs make terrible mistakes at the trade deadline. Is Joe Sakic better to react right now, or is he better off to wait and try to do things in Chicago at the draft?
Well, if he can create a market, I can see the value in doing it now. I mean, for starters, this isn't a good draft. It's not seen as one that, you know, you're going to see the kind of players that we've had come into the league in recent years. So, I mean, if you're acquiring a prospect, you know, someone who's already been drafted by another organization, you're certainly closer to getting them, you know, play for your team at some point here. And you know, it's a little more palatable because the sense of Colorado, even though they're entertaining these moves, is they are trying to do this a little bit on the fly. They're not looking to completely blow it up and finish 30th the next 5 years if they can avoid it. So there's a priority on getting players that are close to playing. And, you know, so if you have that scenario and with the draft not, you know, holding the same appeal where they're going to be trying to move up potentially, or I guess, you know, obviously they might hold the number one pick depending how the lottery goes, you know, I can understand why it's happening during the season. And then, you know, they also have a benefit in that it's not going to be, you know, a huge seller's market at this time. It doesn't appear. I don't think there'll be a ton of teams in there with them that have certainly the kind of players are willing to deal. And then, you know, that might create the scenario that they need to get a pretty big haul here. And that's, you know, really all that matters no matter when the timing comes. But, you know, the benefit, I guess, that he has is that both of these guys, you know, are on deals beyond the season. These aren't rental players. There's not, if you can't get the sort of deal that he's wanting, he doesn't have to do it now. But certainly it sounds like the preference is to move things along and see in what other directions they can go with some of those players that have been around here the last 5 or 6 years with the Avalanche.
Because Colorado and Phoenix have been the two teams that most people have been dialing in on. Are you in that group that's now lumping Dallas into that group?
For me, they're there. You know, I got a sense that you know, that's where Jim Neal is leaning. And, you know, they had a tough loss in Nashville, blew a 3-0 lead. I mean, they play in Winnipeg tonight, so you know, that kind of lines up as a big game. If they were to lose that one, it's just another team that they're behind as they try to come back. I think Detroit is getting a little closer as well to, you know, leaning towards being a seller. And, you know, there's some nice pieces there for the rental sort of market, which is primarily what we deal with at the deadline, you know, be it a Thomas Vanek, who's had a nice year with the Red Wings, even, you know, some more playoff kind of gritty players like Steve Ott, who, you know, is you know, would probably come at a pretty reasonable price. I think that they'll be a team we see enter the marketplace here soon. And, you know, beyond that, there's still not a ton. I mean, the Vancouver, I guess, remains a bigger question mark. I have to believe when push comes to shove that they'll be a seller, but, you know, it doesn't sound like that they're at that position just yet. So we're kind of waiting on the market, but it is coming somewhat more into view here. And there will be more players available, and obviously that will likely spark, you know, a few moves that come, you know, before the night before March 1st. I mean, that we still have some time here to get something done in the next 2 weeks before we get right down to the deadline.
All right, and probably a consistent question for up until now, until March 1st. Anything you're hearing, anything you're kind of working on in that vein that's come up today? I know the coach situation in Montreal is clearly the story of the day, but is there anything else out there that's percolating?
That's definitely the biggest story that's rocketing around the league. I mean, you know, I think that Montreal has had most eyes on it. To me, is only the start. And that's why, you know, the mere fact that the Habs are believed to be an Duchene is a pretty, that would be a pretty big story in itself, you know, getting a player still in his mid-20s, you know, a Canadian Olympian. I think that Marc Bergevin, pardon me, is probably the most motivated player at this time. I mean, when you have a market where even Stan Bowman says he's not involved, I mean, we're so used to the Blackhawks being one of the teams that gets in there and does stuff. I mean, I know locally here, the Leafs, who are sort of flirting with a playoff spot, will they or won't they, are saying they're not going to be too active. I think that, you know, a lot of eyes are going to Montreal, and you know, the feeling that, you know, this coaching change will just be the start. And then, you know, I would expect that they're going to have at least one or two more headlines for us here in the weeks ahead.
Never dull, my friend, never dull. Chris, as always, I appreciate this. We will talk to you in a couple of days.
Sounds good, Rob. Thanks.